Welcome to The Telegram. I'm Tim Stanley. Edward Snowden, traitor or hero? This week we're talking about liberty. With the PRISM scandal raging in the United States, it's time to ask whether or not the surveillance state is out of control. And we're also joined by a leading American conservative who tells us that the Republican Party needs to embrace the liberty revolution if it's ever going to see the inside of the White House again. I'm joined in the studio by Dan Hodges, Telegraph writer and former Labour advisor, and in an interview recorded earlier today by Jim DeMint, a former senator from South Carolina and the new head of the Heritage Institute. We live in unnerving times. In the past few weeks, we've discovered that the American Tax Office has targeted conservatives, that its Department of Justice has collated phone records and harassed journalists. Now the movement for civil liberties has a new hero in the form of Edward Snowden, who has revealed the existence of an extraordinary program of surveillance called PRISM. It's all starting to feel less like we're living in 2013 and more like 1984. One man, though, who isn't worried about it is Dan Hodges, and he says that it's okay for the state to carry out this kind of surveillance on its own people. Dan, are you seriously not worried about the state collating phone records, potentially hacking into emails, targeting political opponents? Does this really not trouble you?
Well, I think we have to divide them. I mean, I think you've lumped together a few sins and non-sins, but certainly if the state wasn't monitoring suspected terrorists, wasn't trying to prevent atrocities like we saw on 9/11, that we saw here on 7/7, then I would be very, very worried indeed. What it seems to me we've learnt this week is that that a programme that was set up under George W. Bush, that there was subject of congressional oversight, that was the subject of judicial oversight, has been carried on by Barack Obama, and that has led to this this unholy alliance between the sort of the liberal left and the libertarian right, who seem to be fighting over themselves to use this as PRISM as a stick to attack Barack Obama. But it's quite clear that this is aimed at preventing acts of terrorism, and I, for one, applaud it.
Okay, so there's a lot to unpick there. First of all, it hasn't prevented acts of terrorism. Now, this is a constant argument that we hear. David Cameron yesterday said that Woolwich was an example of the kind of dangerous thing that happens and is why we need a surveillance state. Well, it happened. If this surveillance is so great, if it's so necessary, why does Fort Hood happen? Why does Boston happen? Why does Woolwich happen? Why are we collating all this information? Why are we spying on our own people this way if we don't then prevent the acts of terror?
But Tim, with respect, I mean, I thought the point was that we weren't even aware of this this surveillance system until sort of the start of this week, the end of last week. How do we know it hasn't prevented acts of terrorism? How do we know which acts of terrorism haven't been prevented as a result of this surveillance?
Oh, it may well have done, but I'm confused because the argument I keep on hearing is that we need this in order to prevent Fort Hoods, in order to prevent Woolwich, in order to prevent Boston, and yet they happen. I mean, this is a big stumbling block for me, logically. I don't understand why it is we're justifying having these massive programs if they then allow things to happen.
Yes, but I don't think anybody's suggesting that the programs such as PRISM are infallible. I think what people are suggesting is that in many instances, and you've just acknowledged that, in many instances, the intelligence gathered by systems such as PRISM could prevent acts of terrorism. And I think logic dictates that they would. I mean, this is part of, is the flaw in the arguments of those who oppose this. On the one sense, they say this huge monolithic intelligence gathering network is being put in place that is on such a scale that is putting the most fundamental liberties at risk. And then people are saying, but actually, it only will catch innocent people. It will not actually catch those attempting to perpetrate terrorist crimes. It's quite clear, if you look at the scale and scope of this system, you look at what's happened to the efforts of Al-Qaeda and other organisations to perpetuate large-scale terrorist atrocities on the scale of 9/11, they have been significantly reduced. And one of the reasons for that, amongst others, is the efforts of the American intelligence services and other
intelligence services. Yeah, but those intelligence services just aren't doing their job very well. I mean, I'm not going to keep on pushing this point. It seems extraordinary to me that in the case of Woolwich, we could actually have a photo of this guy in a Kenyan court after he tried to join Al-Qaeda. And yet, despite this incredible net of surveillance, that man still manages to break through. But putting that issue aside, how far, then, Are you prepared to go? It seems to me you're pushing a utilitarian argument that whatever the government can do, it should do. So where do you draw the line? Would you like to sort of have a total DNA database of the entire population, something like that?
I mean, I personally wouldn't have any problems at all with a DNA database. I mean, I want the maximum amount of intelligence available to the authorities commensurate with our freedom as individuals. I can't for the life of me think why.
But that's entirely contradictory. How can you accept the state collecting the maximum amount of intelligence on people while also protecting individual privacy?
Well, I said the maximum, we would all agree, would we not, that there is a balance to be struck between our right to privacy and the need of ourselves via the state to protect our freedoms. Now, the question is, in this instance, do we think that the fact that the most sort of secretive and sophisticated intelligence gathering techniques have been splashed all over the front of the world's national newspapers, do we actually think that balance is being struck in this instance?
Well, it is, because it means that we now know what our own government is doing. Is transparency not important in a democracy? Is it not important that we have... Obviously, we don't want to know literally the details of every counterintelligence operation, but we have the right to know what kind of tools the government has and how it's using them. Surely, in a democracy, that's a right of the people.
But we have to have, as I say, a balance between scrutiny and oversight and secrecy. The whole point about covert intelligence operations is that they are covert. The clue is in the name. The idea that this is in some way something that is being kept from the people and their representatives is wrong. We elect representatives. There was judicial, as I say, oversight. There was cross-party congressional oversight. There was also cross-party oversight from the executive. I repeat, this was a system that was put in place first
but
by George Bush.
But the NSA also lied to Congress, it would seem. If Edward Snowden is correct, then the head of the NSA lied to Congress about what the government was capable of doing and whether or not it was doing it. Now, regardless of what you think about the importance of counterintelligence programs remaining secret, that's something you're not supposed to do. And that suggests to me this has gone beyond a question of transparency. This is about the security agencies actually lying to people about what they're doing.
Yes, but with respect, I mean, you're taking Snowden's views on face value. I mean, we don't know what the motivation is of this individual. We don't know what incentives he has to say some of the things that he is saying.
What do you think his motives are? Do you think he's motivated by money, by desire for fame? What is it?
I've absolutely no idea what his motivation is. All I know is this is a man who was at the heart of the U.S. intelligence services, who enjoyed a privileged position at the heart of that network. With that privilege came responsibilities. He, for reasons known to himself, decided to divest himself on those responsibilities, to leave his partner, leave his family, disappear overnight, turn up in Chinese territory, one of the largest operating totalitarian states on the globe, and claim that he was there because he respected their freedoms. He told us he was under threat from the NSA trying to assassinate him. He told us the NSA may have been sending triad assassins after him. He booked into the hotel under his own name. I'm not really sure what his motivation is or who he is. I mean, I'm not going to try.
You're giving
and
us
speak
one interpretation of his actions. I mean, another interpretation is he is a guy who has walked away from his family, who's walked away from a very good job, which implies to me a tremendous sacrifice has been made on his part. And I infer that the reason why he's gone for maximum publicity is precisely because he wants everyone to know who his family are, who he is, where he is, so that he can't be targeted by anyone. I don't see any of that as unreasonable. But look, this raises another issue. This security state, this thing that's looking after us, this thing that has to lie to us in order to keep us safe, it's also kind of incompetent, isn't it? If it's allowing a guy who only worked for the NSA under contract for 3 months, if it's allowing that kind of guy access to information that he can very easily steal. So not only is it a case we're allowing these people all this power, but we're also allowing them to mess up.
So you think that the state isn't actually being draconian enough with people like him?
No. What I'm saying is the state should not be given the power by which it can be both draconian and mess up. You're saying the state should have that power, and it doesn't seem to trouble you that it has the power to be authoritarian or incompetent with our data and our freedom.
But are you suggesting that because the NSA allowed someone such as our whistleblower in question to blow the whistle, that as a result of that, that demonstrates that the NSA and the entire American anti-terrorist security apparatus should be folded up and disbanded?
No, and no one's arguing that. I'm not arguing that, and I'm not against any kind of security state at all. I'm not saying there should be nothing at all. This is a debate about proportionality and
competence. When you say you're against,
you don't think,
but when you say you're against any sort of security state,
I'm
what
not
do you
against
mean?
Any sort of security state. Right. I'm not against any kind. Look, a security state is simply a thing. The security state is simply something that happens because we have things like CCTV. It's sort of unavoidable, and it's also an attempt to organize the collection of data by the government on people who are potentially a threat. Now, under Bush, we had that. That was about identifying foreign criminals who posed a threat to the US. What people are worried about now is the security state developing its own life and accruing too much power. But that doesn't seem to worry you.
But under Obama, and this has been reported extensively over the last 48 hours, under Obama, the judicial oversight of this program was tightened.
Right, okay, but it's still there. The program is still there. It's the program itself that worries people.
But Tim, you just said you weren't worried by the program when it was being operated by George Bush.
I didn't say I wasn't worried by the program.
Oh, so you were worried
by
the program.
No. What I said was, first of all, I'm troubled by the program anyway. But under Bush, the principle was that it was only aimed at collecting data on foreign threats and foreign criminals. That was the idea behind it. Now, it's true that in 2006 we found out that they were collating large amounts of cell phone data from other people too. And that's when that was clamped down upon and Bush gave in and said we'll have greater judicial oversight. But I'm not here to defend Bush. My point is that the program has gotten out of control and it's reasonable for people to demand both transparency and to punish government officials who allow that to happen.
But if you've got the program receiving oversight from the democratically elected executive, if you've got it receiving oversight from the democratically elected legislature, if you've got it receiving oversight from the judiciary, as you've just acknowledged,
yeah,
what do you want? Do you
well,
want
because all of those things
in which
won't
in
work.
Which the NSA well, officials sit there and discuss what.
But the oversight won't work if the NSA then lies to Congress. That's the problem. And what Edward Snowden is saying to us is that the NSA has been lying.
Yes, but you're taking as we were going. You're taking Snowden at face value. I'm not taking him at face value in this instance, but obviously, if it's true that the NSA have been misleading the democratically elected politicians about the surveillance being done in the name of the people, that's very, very serious. But that is a separate issue from the system which, as you acknowledge, was put in place by George Bush, was extended by Barack Obama. I haven't seen the Obama administration, nor have I seen Congress, claiming that they have been misled in any significant way about the operation of this system. The only person who apparently says that Congress is being lied to is not Congress, but the whistleblower.
Well, actually, there are a number of senators who have expressed concern about that. Now, all of these things, now you said at the very beginning when we started that there were many different things that I was drawing upon, the IRS, the DOJ, the AP phone record stuff. The point is that they are all very different things. They are not about one particular party targeting another particular party. A Fox journalist was targeted, but AP is not political. All of this suggests, does it not, that government is out of control? When you put all these things in together, into the mix, it's creepy, it's weird.
But what element of it is creepy and what element of it is weird and what element of it suggests the government is, to use your phrase, out of control?
Well, the fact that so many, I really don't know why you don't get why this is creepy. Is it not creepy that the IRS should target people on the basis of their political persuasion? Is that not innately weird and wrong?
Well, I wouldn't say it was creepy. It's certainly wrong. And I think everybody acknowledges that it was wrong. But I don't think there's any suggestion that there was any, and from what I've read about this, I don't think there's any suggestion that this was a political directive sent down from on high to target people of a particular political persuasion. From what I've read about the IRS scandal, incident, call it what you will, is that these were practices that were being run out of a specific IRS office. I think it was in Cincinnati. I've seen people who worked at the office who themselves were concerned about the practices and the way the office is run, who were indeed sacked from the office, themselves saying to journalists that the processes that were being followed were the subject of managerial incompetence rather than any sort of specific political targeting.
But everything you're describing, if you stand back from the people involved saying, we didn't mean it to be political, and actually look at what they did, everything you're describing suggests political harassment. You're
saying not so, but Tim,
one particular office picked on one particular political group. Now, I'm sorry, if it's only organisations which have words like Tea Party or Patriot in their name that they were targeting, that suggests to me it's political.
But Tim, I'm not saying it wasn't political. I'm saying people who resigned from the office, who were sacked from that office because they were not happy with the practices that were being followed, have themselves said it wasn't political. It was rather as a result of managerial incompetence.
Now, Dan, you said at the beginning there's some weird coalition of libertarians from right and left opposing this. I have to say I find it pretty weird that liberals, who are traditionally defined by a respect for law and order and the Constitution and for individual freedom, are rushing to defend the US government in this instance. Is this because you love Obama?
No, it's because, as I said, because as we've seen, what has been conducted has been done within the law and within the Constitution.
Dan Hodges, thank you very much. Many people think that the only way the Republican Party will win the 2016 presidential election is if they move back to the centre ground. But not so, said Senator Jim DeMint, who I spoke to earlier about the future of the GOP. Senator, we have a presidency in meltdown. A lot of people don't even understand how he got elected in the first place, let alone how he got re-elected. Despite all of his many faults, the Republican Party has failed to put up someone strong against him. And there's a feeling that they're not capitalizing well enough upon the latest set of scandals and outrages. What's wrong with the Republican Party? Why can't it get rid of this guy? Why can't it stop Democrats getting elected? And what does it need to do to turn itself around?
I can't speak for the Republican Party, Tim, although I have been a Republican in the House and the Senate for 14 years. The reason I left the Senate is the same reason you just expressed, is that Republicans are afraid of their principles. They're afraid to communicate clearly and boldly what we stand for. And what we're trying to do at the Heritage Foundation is to pull together a national coalition of conservatives on the political side as well as just to free people all around America around those concepts of free enterprise and individual liberty. I believe, as Von Hayek once said, that the politicians are corks bobbing on the water, but the people can create the current to take that cork in any direction they would like. And we saw that work in 2010 in the United States with the Tea Party. Republicans had nothing to do with winning that election. It was all about people who cared about ideas, which was pretty simple, about limited government, individual mm-hmm. liberty, just stop the spending and debt. We need to put that coalition back together and add to it, add some new libertarian concepts to the conservative movement and build this big tent that the politicians talk about, but they're afraid to really go out boldly to sell those ideas.
Okay, before we interrogate those ideas, a moderate would say that those conservative principles are actually what consistently loses Republicans' elections, that it's being too radical, too right-wing. That's what people don't like. I mean, Mitt Romney seems like a pretty ordinary radical conservative guy. So, and he lost.
Radical conservative is not a term I would use with Mitt Romney. I think it's exactly the opposite. Republicans have been losing because they have been afraid to run on their principles. Where we see conservatives running boldly, like we saw Ted Cruz in Texas running for the Senate, he went up against the Republican establishment, had very little money or resources, but he won overwhelmingly. We saw the same thing with Marco Rubio and Rand Paul. These were people that I helped as a member of the Senate with a fund that I created. But people all over the country responded to their message and to, I think, their genuine presentation. Republicans lose when they're afraid to act like Republicans. And I've heard that all over the country. If people want to vote for leftist ideas, they're going to vote for Democrats. And Republicans try to come to the middle, they're going to lose. The only way we can win is with bold, clear ideas.
Okay, so let's talk about some of those bold, clear ideas. Immigration reform.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to happen. Something's got to change because you've got a lot of people living within the United States now who are not proper citizens, so they fall through the law, but they are a necessary part of the economy and society. Why don't you guys support letting those people become citizens?
Well, it makes no sense to reward those who came to America illegally with all the benefits of citizenship. We've got 4 million people around the world waiting to come to the United States legally, and we make it very difficult for them to come, people who could contribute to our economy in a much better way than those who come illegally. What we need to do is fix our immigration system so that those who can come to America and help Americans who are there with better jobs and better income can come to America. We do need to control our borders. We need to fix our system so that we know who's legal and not. And then we can deal with those who came there illegally. But America has tried this blanket amnesty before. All it did was encourage more illegal immigration. We don't need to make that mistake again. But immigration is not the bold, clear idea I was talking about. It's one of the issues they brought up in Washington to divide Republicans. The bold ideas are the ideas of America is a ground-up country, that freedom means millions of people making their own decisions about what they want to do and what they value. That can't be accomplished from the top down by central government. You see the same thing happening in Europe, this whole inclination that we have to centralize everything, that many nations need to blend into one and lose their identity, and that somehow is going to make us stronger.
Okay, Senator, so it sounds a lot like what you're talking about here is libertarianism. Do you think that given the PRISM scandal, given the Verizon scandal, that the time has come for a focus on the concept of liberty as something which conservatives can get around?
That has always been the concept of America, is individual liberty and limited government. And I think that is probably the glue that could hold together the freedom movement in America, which would include conservatives, libertarians, a lot of independents who don't consider themselves political at all. And liberty is a bigger concept than just political, just the political framework. It is a worldview. It's how we want to live. And I think that is a resurgent idea in America that can pull together a lot of different political factions.
Where do you see is the right balance between security and liberty? If you take something like the NSA, following people's emails, people's telephone calls and things like that, do you see this as a necessary price to pay in order to defend freedom in the long term, or is PRISM giving up too much liberty for too little?
Well, it depends on how they do it. When this was presented to us years ago when they were trying to pass the Patriot Act, and I was in the Senate, and I had deep reservations about the Patriot Act, but I was very concerned about our security. The Patriot Act supposedly was to allow the government to scan communications of Americans. And communications around the world that might be coming into America. But the information was not to be collected and stored, but only used when there was a connection between a known terrorist and an American. And in that case, they had to take it to the FISA court to get the permission to actually look at the data. Now what we're hearing sounds very different. That mm-hmm. they're not only scanning information, they're collecting it and storing it, which creates the opportunity for misuse, as we saw with the IRS. And that's what I think Americans and people all around the world are afraid of, is that the intelligence agencies, whether they be in America or here, are collecting information that can be used for political purposes later.
So do you see PRISM as an abuse of the Patriot Act?
We have to find out what they've really been doing, but as it's been reporting in the news, I think it is a misuse.
Okay, because that kind of brings us back to the first point we were discussing about what's wrong with the Republicans, because a lot of what is happening now is stuff that was authorized by Republican Congresses
exactly.
in the early noughties. A lot of this stuff began with Bush. Mm-hmm. So do you see Republicans as being partly responsible for the security panic we're going through right now?
Well, I think both parties have to take blame for a lot of things in America right now, the economy as well as this security problem. I want to find out more about what is actually happening, and we've got the whole intelligence team at Heritage looking into this, because I don't think Republicans have to take the blame if the Obama administration has misused their authority. But if it's the Patriot Act has authorized things that actually violate people's privacy, then we need to change it. We just need to find out what happened. But obviously it doesn't sound very comforting to people who believe in liberty and some personal privacy that any agency is looking at our emails or listening to our phone calls.
Senator, what would your ideal candidate for the presidency in 2016 be like? What would they push as their issues? What would they believe in?
Well, I think conservatives need to help field a candidate who understands that the national platform, a federal platform, needs to be simple and clear. Much like the Tea Party had in 2010, where they weren't dealing with multiple issues, it was pretty much stop the spending and borrowing and the growth of government, focus on limited constitutional ideas. The federal government in America is designed to do very little. It's supposed to defend our country and make sure we have justice for all and that commerce works between the states. Beyond that, the federal government needs to move out of a lot of the things such as health care and education, energy, things that don't need to be done at the federal level. We need a candidate that focuses on a constitutional limited federal government. I think that's going to draw a lot of appeal from conservatives, libertarians, and Americans who are just sick and tired of big government.
And is there anyone in particular you find appealing right now?
Well, there are a number of governors who have done bold reforms. You hear of folks like Scott Walker in Wisconsin. We've got some senators, as you've mentioned, like Marco Rubio and Rand Paul, who have, I think, are speaking with very clear voices right now. But the important thing now is not to pick the person, but to cultivate the right ideas across the country so that when the candidates run, they can embrace the ideas that are not only right for America but can help win elections. That's our job at Heritage, is to create that current among the people, cultivate the ideas so that the politics will follow. And that's my most important point today, is we need to remember that politics follows the people, follows the culture. And if we don't do our job cultivating the right ideas around America and around the world, eventually the wrong ideas will win elections.
Senator Jim DeMint, thank you very much.
Thank you, Tim.
For more opinion and commentary, you can find us at telegraph.co.uk.